Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 71st Venice Film Festival, and I'm joined by Ben and Joshua Safdie, who are presenting their latest work, Heaven Knows What. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
So I think we should start off by telling our listeners a little about the film, the story of the film, first of all.
Heaven Knows What the film is about. No, I'm joking. We were doing some heavy research for another film, a much bigger film that we were ambitiously chasing for a couple years in the Diamond District in New York City. And I think I was, at the time, I was meeting with like an Uzbeki guy to do some type of thing with a Rolex and a Uzbeki lounge on 47th Street. And it was a bad day. Some guy said, no, go fuck yourself. And you're not giving me any money, so I'm not giving you any help. So I was walking down with our producer, one of our producers of Heaven Knows What, Sebastian Baer-McLeod, and I see the most beautiful girl in the world, strikingly original, unique vibe immediately. And I say to Sebastian, I say, this girl's so amazing, she's so unique. He said, go talk to her, we'll find a role for her in the Diamond District film. I said, she probably doesn't speak English, I thought she spoke Russian or something. He goes, just go. So I go and I start talking to her, and she immediately has this thick New Jersey accent. And I say to her, what do you do here? And she's like, oh, I work for this guy named Eddie, Fat Eddie. And I was like, oh, cool. And I was like, I'd like to talk to you about maybe acting in a movie. She's like, oh, I've never done that before. I said, yeah. So we met up the next week, and I quickly learned that she was homeless, and she was involved in a very destructive relationship with a mysterious man named evil man named Ilya, who I was also attracted to through her attraction. And almost soon after that, that she had a substance abuse, a heroin addiction. So, and that wasn't the beginning, but that was the beginning of the film in a weird way.
So what made you like think that you wanted to develop a story within this kind of subculture?
The stories that she would tell me verbally that I would relay to Benny and Ronnie, the co-writer, co-editor, were so involved. And the way that these people were living their lives, I'm really obsessed with living in the present, like now, living now. And they didn't know anything past 1 hour. They would tell me a story and they would talk about it like it was 10 years ago. And I was like, when did this happen? They said, oh, this was a long time ago. This must have been Monday on like a Friday. And I was like, a long time ago, Monday. So this immediate warp of time was the attraction. And then obviously her vibe and her insight was really attractive as well. And then the real film didn't really come about until we started to commission her to write about her life and put some of her insight and her story and her intelligence onto a page. And she would guide us in such an eloquent, unique way. I mean, she dropped out of high school when she was 15 years old. So when those pages started to come in, which became the book, which became the movie, the pages, like from page one, was just, oh my God.
What she chose to, the character, the names of the people, the way she described the people, the little things that she would mention she would mention one thing that would define an entire personality. And not many people can do that. And the fact that she was able to do that meant, yes, this world has been seen before, you know, and there's been a lot of movies about drugs and street life and this, but you could get something new with her, and that's what the attraction was. In the film, there's a character, it's just so amazing, just when he says that, oh, you should have seen that scene over there, and it's like, how long? Like 5 minutes ago? It's like, it already becomes a scene, like, yeah. 5 minutes, like, just in the past. It's so fun. It's already in the past.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, and also the intensity of the film that comes through. Yeah. And actually, that's visual and sound, too. And it's in the sound work. So I was wondering how you got that whole atmosphere.
The intensity is something that we responded to immediately as well. You know, this was the, you know, the intensity is what makes time, you know, so elusive and temporally so stretched out. Because everything is so intense, it's like Einstein describes relativity. He says, you take an hour sitting next to putting your hand on the stove, and you compare that to an hour sitting next to the girl you're obsessed with. That 1 hour on it, the girl is 20 seconds, and the 1 hour on the stove is eternity. So, you know, the compactness of their cosmos was so unbelievably intense and immediate that we knew that we had to match that with the film. we had to figure out a way to match that. Originally, we were saying, let's make it 70 minutes, and you don't even know what hits you. Unfortunately, we couldn't do that because there's just too much story to tell. But, you know, to me, the beauty of the movie is the way drama and romance are treated. Mm. When Ilya shows up, you know something's going to happen. You know that there's drama around the corner. And that, to me, is the drug. And that's what I relate to most. And heroin becomes this wasteland.
Yeah.
You know, because heroin's a boring drug. You do nothing. You just sit there and do nothing. It's not like speed. You do speed, doing a million things, you know. Heroin, you just do nothing. Mm-hmm. You're like zombies or vampires, you know. And drama, it's interesting when they're looking for the fix is when these people become most alive. It's so strange. It's very strange.
Yeah. And as well as that, you kind of mentioned it before, there's the whole romance storyline as well, which already starts off as tragedy.
Yeah. Very self-destructive. I mean, romance is a very destructive thing.
And that relationship exists solely for that destruction.
It is heroin.
Yeah. And
the fact that she says Ilya with a needle in her arm.
And it's funny because it's like the Mike character, he's such a different person, but he has so many different... He's a destructive character in a different way, but he offers kindness and very strange... It's like all relative, like you were saying. In that world, he's a saint, you know?
Yeah.
In some ways.
In a very extreme way, it's actually a very universal kind of plot line in the movie.
Good guy doesn't get the girl, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, our friend, who's like a critic in America, he said when he got out of the film, he goes... It's like a classic Hollywood film you made.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I picked up this kind of vibe that I hadn't seen since, like, the films of the American New Wave. I was wondering whether you were influenced by that kind of storyline, where it's more character-driven than, like, conventionally constructed.
I mean, characters are everything.
Yeah.
Without a character. I mean,
you could have a great story with no characters. It's the worst movie in the world.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, in that sense, how did you work with the actors to get a performance out of them that was true?
You know, I can't think of the process sometimes. Like, I can spell it out in my mind, and then I don't really, when I see them, and then I sit down and I'm like looking at the final product, I think, you know, how the hell did we do some of these things? But I, you know, I met these kids 8 months, some of them, before we started shooting. So some of the non-actors who are in the film saw me as a friend, a peer. And some of the actors in the film, like the professionals that we cast and stuff, I met them 4 or 5 days before we started shooting. And we did a little audition and we got to talk. But they vibed on our relationship, my relationship with these kids. And they saw, everything is all about, it's about vibe. You have to see, you got to up the ante. You know, like for Caleb, he comes to New York. We tell him, you're going to be playing this character. He already knew. He didn't read a script originally. I gave him 70 pages of writing about the kid. And he read that. And then I said, once you get on the plane, I'll give you the script. So he got on the plane. And then he finally read the script. We meet up with him in New York. He's like, we had his fancy hotel. He goes, why am I staying at a fancy hotel? I said, your agent made us. And he said, I'm playing a street kid. Where the fuck are the kids? And I said, I don't know. He goes, I said, they stay at an internet cafe. He goes, I'm going there. So he immediately saw where everybody was, and he just had to take the elevator. So we just expect a lot from people, and if you don't meet that expectation, you're gone. We don't wait for you. We'll recast you, and, you know, it's just constant pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I mean, Eleanor, our casting director, did a little video behind the scenes of the four bags, the argument where they're arguing about the four bags up in the loft, and he's down on the... And I watched it the other day, and I'm thinking, like, how did we make this movie? No, we're screaming at each other with the actors. You a fucking idiot.
No,
if you don't say this right now, I'm going to... You don't get shit. You're not getting dinner. I mean, I couldn't believe the way we were talking.
And then I was... One of the executive producers, because it was French financing, they
Spring
came...
Spring Breakers people.
They came They came from France to watch one of the days, and... I was just it was the fight scene, you know, and he was just saying, he was just looking at the whole thing, and he's just like, you guys were so far, and then I watch on the screen, and it's like this tight. He goes, I have no idea how you, and he's like, the way that to get the performance, he said it was insanity how it was working, and.
But it makes it more real, I think. That's the key. I mean, it feels it really feels like you're there. In a more general sense, I'd really love to know, because we talked about the self-destructiveness of the characters. Mm-hmm. Are these the kind of characters whose stories you want to tell, or are you looking for more broad storylines?
I have no... It's whoever is interesting, you know? It's I don't know if it's particular self-destructiveness, but there's a lot of that in all the characters that we do, yeah. But...
I can be pretty self-destructive. Yeah. I'm attracted to movies about movies and people flawed. Yeah, I don't know why. I see myself in them, or
there's a humanity in the mistakes that people make.
Yeah, and to remain true to the theme of the film, which remains quite heavy, you're not afraid to take the audience out of their comfort zone, which I found very brave too, in especially in today's cinema.
You know, what's interesting is when we were making the movie and doing research and everything, I constantly, you know, it's like, I'm not a spy because, you know, these people actually were my friends, but I would find myself in certain situations where they're speaking in almost in another language because I don't know some of the things they're even talking about. And I would really, I can't say, hey, what are you talking about? I have to pick up on these things and learn them and, you know, and then later on I would ask Ariel, I was like, what did he said that? What the hell did that mean? And she's like, oh, this is what he meant by that. And I was like, oh, interesting. And the amount of times people were trying to get me to get high with them or do this or go into the bathroom with them and watching somebody do something. I mean, I was pulling myself out of a comfort zone. I mean, 2 days before we started shooting, the real Ilya, who Caleb was playing, he OD'd and was not breathing. He was dead, pretty much, in a McDonald's. We have a scene like that in the movie. I mean, that was based off reality, but he and Caleb was there, and the casting director was there, and he comes out of the bathroom, and he's, like, gray, like a ghost, and we're like, oh, my God. And he's like, what? He's like, he's about to fall out, and then, boom, collapses. And we're pumping and bumping, slapping him, spitting water on his face. Ilya! Slapping him. Finally, CPR, he comes out, right? I call Benny and I say, I don't want to do this movie. It's just too... The way they fetishize death is too much for me. And he says, too late.
I was in the production office, like, putting together the sound kit. I'm like, what are you talking? I said, we're 2 days from doing this. I said, it's impossible. I said, we have to go forward. I was like, I've already jumped in.
Yeah. If Benny could jump in, I realized... I mean, you didn't see it.
Of course.
What I experienced in that McDonald's was horrific. But, you know...
I was afraid of that McDonald's.
Yeah.
There was like, bad... That it was this place did not have a good vibe.
No.
And it's the one McDonald's that's unrenovated. It's this.
I, for one, am very happy that you guys have made this film because so far it's been my favorite film of the festival.
Oh,
I'm
going to
go live and say that. Thanks very much for joining us. It was a real pleasure talking with you. Hopefully we'll see each other again with a future project.
Great, thank you. Great.
Thanks very much. This is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.